Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
You know, Paul, I should probably bring the mic closer to me. But you know, this thing about the Age Explorer thing that you came up with about a year ago.
Yes.
You know, I need some kind of like punchline entry. You know, kind of like intro. You know, like you know, I just flew in, and my boy, are my arms tired, or something like that.
Something
with the Explorer
thing. Play upon that. Okay.
With the Explorer thing. So would you work on that for me, please?
On that.
Okay, great.
But you're the Age Explorer, and then we're all on this journey, and we don't know where we're going. The whole world is headed on this journey. The whole baby boomer still think, look at me, I'm still dressed like I'm, 29. We're talking about me being in college, going to the Hash Bash in 1970-something here.
Yeah, we were actually talking about the lost tradition.
the
Hash Bash.
Of youth.
So for all those who are sitting in front of their computer because you're stuck at your desk for lunch,
Google
Hash Bash.
University
or Google Paul, maybe Paul.
University of Michigan had an annual Hash Bash in the 60s or 70s because it was only a $5 misdemeanor to smoke pot. And obviously we're now looking in here in California and elsewhere of legalizing marijuana for anyone over 21. We were way ahead of the curve back then.
Everything old is new again.
I don't know what we were doing.
I was talking about sharing about how I saw a billboard in Huntington Beach right on PCH, right across, ironically, from CVS Pharmacy, that basically was heralding an app that basically was the equivalent of like a Google Maps for cannabis stores.
Yeah, right.
Right. So these are the conversations that happen when we are not on the air, ladies and gentlemen.
But it's part of that age journey. Where are we headed? What's going to happen in the future?
So we're constantly talking about stuff that we don't usually talk about in public.
Yes.
Right. And part of the stuff that we always like to explore is, again, things that we don't discuss usually, things that are that are part of the reality and fabric, especially here in Orange County.
As we're going to discuss today, things that happen and we just close our eyes to. We don't want to know what's happening with certain populations and certain people and whatnot.
Well, if I may just get on the election, podium for a minute here, but, the reality of what's happening around this election season or circus, whichever word you want to choose, it really tells you can't close your eyes to what's going on around you anymore. You really need to get engaged. You really need to be educated. Regardless which way your passions lie in terms of, you have to take an active role in what's happening around you.
Because people are just reacting emotionally. Look what happened in Brexit in England. Despite both political parties, left and right, saying, don't do this. This is dumb. This is going to hurt us. People said, heck with you.
I was watching Bill Maher yesterday, and he had a guest on there, and he said, so what do you think about Brexit? And he goes, well, I actually have Brexit every morning.
Yeah.
Right? We have become a culture of snappy hashtags and labels and things that really, and I think it's a shame because a lot of people basically just absorb that. They don't look beyond it. They don't really look into the stuff that's happening. They don't inform themselves of what really is taking place. And issues and people and special needs and things that are happening in our own backyards and our own communities that we should be taking active role in, we're just satisfied with that 10-minute snapshot.
And we react emotionally. We just hide.
Snippet. I want to thank actually the gentleman who connected us with our guests today is Dan Pittman. Dan, I don't know if you're on mic, but there's one right next to you.
Dan's saying no.
No, Dan is not going there. But he is in the studio, so I just want to say thank you to Dan for doing that.
PR person.
Yeah, he is a PR person. See, I was going to ask the PR person what he thought about all of that, but he's not going there.
He's got clients on both
okay,
sides.
So he's here to represent his clients. So. Without further ado, my guests today in the studio on The Rad Life are Deborah Marsteller, right?
Yes.
And you are the CEO. Yeah, Deborah, please, thanks. They're very directional, these mics, so just get close. It's okay.
That's right. Perfect.
All right.
Thank you.
You are the CEO, I think, of Project Independent.
Yes.
Is it independent or independence?
Independence.
Independence.
Project Independence.
Well, that's pretty cool. 4th of July is coming right around the corner.
Independence Day. That's kind of appropriate. I like how you scheduled this.
We celebrate it now and in the fall. So.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, we have our big walk for independence in September 24th. So.
And what do you guys do? You guys do anything for the 4th that's unique to your organization?
Clever and cute and ties in with Independence Day. Dan's like,
we have a big mail out that encourages people to send us money this time of year that says, you know, what we do and how we do it. And
fight and for independence, yeah.
Right. And well, that it's important to remember there's all kinds of meanings to independence.
So what is Project Independence?
Yeah, why don't you tell people what Project Independence is?
Well, think of your children, your nieces, your nephews. You have a dream for them when they were growing up. Some of the people we work with, their parents really didn't have a dream for them. People with developmental disabilities sometimes are left out of that building of community. And so what we're doing is trying to incorporate people back into their community. We have independent living, supported employment, and community day programs that enmesh people back in. So we're dream weavers, really, mm-hmm. and we're helping people to connect with their families, their neighbors, their employers, and help them build a strong and important life so that they have a place and that they know that they're welcomed and accepted and have things to do that matter.
I love that, and that is so timely because we just had somebody here, I'm looking for her card, whose daughter has cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. And she said the hardest thing was accepting. Her daughter's, I think, now in high school or something like that, that she's just never going to be part of society here. You know, this is they basically said, your daughter's never going to get better. This is it. So just accept. She's never going to go to school with other kids. She's never going to do normal activities. She's going to be in special facilities. She's going to be away from the rest of the world for her whole life. And this woman said, absolutely not. You know, we may not be able to fix this, but we're not going to hide her. We're going to integrate her into, and so she fought to get her in regular classes. She fought to, you know, she created this nonprofit foundation. I should hook you guys together because it's mm-hmm. kind of the same idea here that these people shouldn't be left in the shadows here.
See, but that just angers me and makes me sad at the same time. Okay, when did we become a society of us and them, in all things, including this? When
isn't
did we
that
stop?
What the fight is these days. It's them against us. Whatever the them is, there's large groups of thems that we don't want to see and be around.
And it starts off with a simple idea of just saying, whether it's out of frustration, out of lack of knowledge, out of mm-hmm. not knowing where resources are, mm-hmm. this sort of fatalistic approach of, well, there's not going to be normalcy here.
Mm-hmm.
You've right. talked about group homes and how cities are fighting group homes, or maybe not the city so much, but a lot of residents. Hey, I'm all for a group home, a sober living home, a home for developmentally disabled, a home for seniors in my neighborhood, but not in my neighborhood.
It's even more basic than that. We don't have affordable housing in the form of motels or rentals. A lot of these properties, because of communities that are built out, a lot of these properties are being torn down and made into a high density mixed use. A recent situation where somebody actually who's involved in this went up to Glendale. There was a discussion at the city council. And they were basically advocating very calmly to the fact that when you take motels and you tear them down, which is our form of affordable housing, we may not think of it that way,
right.
but there are people, Anaheim is a big example, where people live there because that's the only form of housing they can afford. And they are literally on the razor's edge of falling into that poverty level, right? I mean, this is part of the reality of Orange County, too, ladies and gentlemen. It's not just all the plush houses behind gated communities.
Orange County Register today said, we just did a show on this morning, the Building Industry Association was here talking about this exact issue, lack of affordability for housing. And we just, according to the OC Register today being the end of June 2016,
29th of June,
you're listening as a podcast later, we just passed $700,000 as the average home, the median home price here in Orange County. $700,000.
And you have people, and I'm not going to even say who it is, but it's going to be very obvious, okay? In certain places, up a little central Orange County, okay, that are looking for tax breaks on developments of hospitality-type projects at the price, or I would think, at the loss of revenue to that city of $500 million. Okay? Wow. And there are city council members lined up to basically vote it in. Where does that become an example of lack of responsibility as a civic servant? Where you basically are all interest, your interests are so skewed, whatever reason you may have, right, that you are not making a priority future needs for special, whether it's special needs or whether it's
aging
affordable living, or even people who are not necessarily destitute or on low income because of whatever, okay, special conditions, but are actually kids that are born and raised in those communities that would like to stay in those communities
that
they basically have a loyalty to, but there's no way to do it.
Whole other topic.
So things with special needs, I mean, mm-hmm. you know.
So how do you, I guess we'll bring this full circle. What do you do in this program? Do you just give them programs and assistance? Do you actually have homes? Are you getting into group homes? What is it that you do to take people with special needs and reintegrate them in society? And how does that work when everything is so expensive here?
Maybe, Deborah, I know you guys have a bunch of programs that kind of focus on different things.
Right, but specifically around housing, because of the very big lack of affordable housing and vouchers that allow people to get a housing voucher from the county or the city and then use that voucher to supplant the rents, because rents along with housing costs have skyrocketed.
$1,700 or something, $1,700 or $1,800 according this morning, that the average rent in Orange County.
Right, for a one-bedroom.
Yeah, right. If you're lucky to find it, by the way.
Yeah, and so what are the people in our programs, in our independent living program, get on a list, and when they're accepted, they get a HUD voucher that will pay. They will pay the rent then based on their income, so it affords them the ability to move into the community, into a housing apartment development, and live and pay what they can afford.
And HUD will pick up the balance?
Yes.
Housing and Urban Development federal program here?
Right, exactly. The problem being, though, that after 30 years, after a development, some of these that goes off of affordable housing, and then they can get fair market. And if HUD won't up the rent that they help pay for, then our guys
out.
All get kicked out. And maybe they've lived in, we have a guy named John, I'll call him John, had lived in a place for 20 years. That's his support circle.
Yep. Yeah.
When you have a developmental disability, it's really important if you
have familiar surroundings,
regular routine,
yep.
the same bus routes, all of these things. Well, all of a sudden, his neighbors were different. It took two buses to get to work. All of the things changed for him. And these are the things I don't think people realize is these rules have consequences.
Oh, my God. Somebody closes the ramp closest to you to get on the freeway, and your whole life is up in upheaval, let alone if you are basically with special needs and somebody just basically turned your life upside down for you.
Give us some of the statistics. Let's get those out of the way in the beginning. How many people are we talking about here in a county of 3 million people? How many people are developmentally disabled? How many do you deal with?
There are actually about 17,000 people with developmental disabilities here in Orange County that are on the Regional Center of Orange County roster. There are probably 4,000 more that have not sought services with the Regional Center.
And why do you think that's the case?
There's some cultural implications for seeking outside help. Some of our minority communities believe it's a family issue to deal with, and so they don't seek outside support.
I hate to even ask this question, but is any of it shame or hiding it, or I don't want to even deal with it or acknowledge it?
In some cultures, it definitely is, but in others, it's a responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
factor. And but there are still some cultures that see this as a...
You're damaged. You're not
right.
normal.
And I don't want to acknowledge this
right.
or admit it or go seek
right.
help for
or it.
It
might affect the marriageability of your other children.
Exactly.
And there's all kinds
oh,
of
wow.
things that
yeah,
go
yeah.
into different
the
cultural implications.
The marriageability of your children.
No, it's very true.
Wow.
I mean, I'll just put it this way. It wasn't that long ago, okay, when certain people... would hide the fact that maybe a child or, had leukemia or had cancer at a younger part of their life because they had siblings and they didn't want to have that be sort of something that's a stigma, you know, that runs in the family. There's a head. I totally can see that
mm-hmm.
in certain
mm-hmm.
cases. But that's a lot of people that have not sought assistance.
Right, right. And it's and as they age and their families age, the implications for the siblings is very great because you have people then that are expecting their children to take care of the person mm-hmm. with developmental disability.
Just passed on.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that may or may not happen.
Right.
And so it's important that people reach out and get these supports.
And define the population. Developmentally disabled, I know, is a broad term here.
It's a blank, yeah.
Right.
Give us some idea of what that covers. So give us some example. Who is a developmentally disabled person?
A person with developmental disabilities is a person with autism, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, epilepsy, any disability that occurs at or before birth that is expected to be lifelong.
Mm-hmm.
In California, it's an injury that occurs up until the age of 18. Mm. The federal standard is 21.
So what happens after that?
So if you had
if you have a
traumatic brain injury, say mm-hmm. after that age, it's just considered traumatic brain injury, and then you don't have the state resources behind you. It's either insurance or private pay.
So if you're in a car crash or something,
mm-hmm.
you're 21 and your brain is severely damaged, or you're whatever, drowning accident or something.
Exactly.
Something.
It's an insurance issue.
So I want to just be clear because a lot of people know us as a show that also focuses sort of on aging and baby boomers and stuff like that.
Right.
From what I'm hearing, Deborah, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that this particular situation, developmental disabilities that you're representing are people that actually up to the age of 18 and 21. So it's not necessarily people that develop it when they get older. It's people that get older but already have it.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so, and that's a big deal. We've been around for 40 years now. And a number of the people we're serving are moving into the
you're dealing with them in a different
demographic because they were kids when I was first started here. And so now we're seeing people that are at retirement age. Maybe their parents are very, very elderly or have already passed,
right.
and they're looking at retirement in the same way we all look at retirement. Those same concerns, will I have enough money when I retire?
Right.
What will I do that's beneficial every day? How can I stay involved? Will I have any friends when I don't have my friends that I see every day at work?
Or family members that are my support system.
And I knew, I've only known one couple. It was a relative of my wife's, and she had a child with Down syndrome. And when she, as she got older, she was terrified. Will the other kids in the family take care of this person? Will there be money? She tried to leave money behind, and she did
mm-hmm.
die.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very difficult because suddenly the rest of the extended family had to they didn't know of a program like yours. Is what they weren't in Orange County here.
Yeah.
What do you do? This down child can't take care of himself.
Mm-hmm.
And mother, who spent devoted her whole life to taking care of the child, her father, is gone. There's no person to help them. There's no money to help them. There's no support to help them. And they're still around.
Well, and then that's why I think, and I'm going to just read it, okay? It really is, and I think the name is very apropos, independence, okay? It's enriching lives of people with developmental disabilities, but your mission is actually to promote civil rights for people with developmental... Why am I having a problem with that word? Developmental disabilities through services which expand independence, and I'm assuming independent choice, not just even choice, right? So, because if you do that and you're successful to whatever degree it is, then the situation, Paul, that you described becomes a little bit less of a concern for that parent. That child has developed an independent support system. That there is, and I think it, your mission expands beyond this, you know, having a job, friends, and a home of your own are all intrinsic to a healthy, happy life. We all know this and take it for granted, right?
Take it for granted. But again, if you're born with one of these disabilities and it's not going to get better, what I'm hearing is parents are told this is the way it is, and they're never going to be able to have a job, have a home, have friends, have all these things.
Well, Deborah, you've been involved in this for over 40 years, I think, right? Okay. And I know you were in a different capacity, and that, you know, Project Independence is a combination of two entities that were around in Orange County that have come together, I think it was 2007.
Right. We merged.
Yeah. And I think the focuses were slightly different, but they were complementary, so I think that was the reason for them to be coming together.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
And so I'm curious, with your exposure on a timeline of 40 years, would you say that people who got involved in the process, as they have gotten older, have actually benefited from that process? I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but from the process in a measurable way?
Exactly. No, I think I don't think we can emphasize it enough. When I first started, and the same with Tim, people didn't come out of school with any skills. Oftentimes the people I worked with at the beginning came out of Fairview and were institutionalized, and their communication patterns were built around survival. And so their maladaptive behaviors, their way of getting their needs met,
might
have included slugging you in the back.
Yep.
And that's because it was quick and it was an effective way of getting your needs met. And so, but now we're seeing people that come out of school because of the focus on transition and employment and living independently. People are coming out with skills that make it so much easier to move into their own place. In California, we're really fortunate in so many ways, but California has the Latterman Act, and this is the late 60s. Frank Latterman, a very conservative Republican, actually put together really poetic legislation that said people with developmental disabilities in the state of California should be able to live, work, and recreate with their non-disabled peers.
Wow.
And you think of that really simple piece of legislation built our birth-to-death supports for people with developmental disabilities, supports that could be defined by themselves and their families. Their circles of support could actually sit down and do a futures plan and say, these are my dreams. These are the things I need to be successful in my life. And then an IPP can be built around that. And
IPP being independent
program plan. I'm sorry. Thank
you. You're always fighting acronyms.
No, it's okay. When you guys did IDD earlier, too, it was like, okay. So
intellectual and developmental.
We're all inside the bubble talking the same language, right?
I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
A plan is like the hub of a wheel. And all of the services that are available in just here in Orange County are the spokes. And Project Independence is one of the spokes. But the plan, the IPP, the individual program plan, is what drives the services and which allows the state to come in and pay for those types of services. So we will help develop a plan with a person that says, I need independent living support services. I may only need 14 hours a month to live on my own, but those are really important 14 hours.
Sure, absolutely. What would they include?
Helping somebody budget and pay their bills.
Okay.
Helping people schedule and plan their doctor's appointments.
Right.
Helping someone make sure they had their meds.
You teach them how to cook or
nutrition,
how to shop for food.
Exactly. Shopping for food, making sure that they're not living on the dollar menu at Del Taco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why did everybody look at me when they said that?
I don't know. In the middle of the show, you were like hitting your little, you know, like a little squirrel with your nut jar.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. And Tim can tell you some stories about some of
Tim
our
people. Tim's being quieter.
I want to just ask one question, and then I do want to introduce Tim because Tim. No, we're not talking about it. No. One question. No, the door's locked. It's an automatic lock. You don't get out of the room until the show's over. But that's how we get things to happen, you know, reality television version. But from a cost, just purely a cost perspective, okay, I think I would like to know. What's I have a feeling about
what's
this.
What's the cost?
Okay. Normal life is costly. Mm-hmm. For somebody with developmental disabilities, is the price tag higher for them on certain, I mean, their demands and needs? Because I think it's important to point that out. Otherwise, people go, oh, you know, HUD's going to pay for this, you know, deadbeat, go get a job kind of thing. I mean, unfortunately, right. There are parts of our society that look at all service support as being, wait a minute, that's coming out of my pocket. I can think of better places to put it.
Right.
But it is a costly thing.
It's a very costly thing. And families, even with the supports that are allowed in California, have so many above and beyond expenses that you and I wouldn't think of on a regular basis, just to schedule around appointments, to get people to therapy, to make sure they have adequate, durable medical equipment if that's required, the accessibility issues. There are some tax breaks for all of that, but to make a home totally accessible.
Well, and that's where I'm going with this, because I wanted to bring in Tim with his background, but the thing that I know, I mean, I'm a commercial interior designer, so we have dealt with handicap accessibility and ADA since the inception of it, right? Mm-hmm. And I tend to execute it in sort of a hospitality environment, so our approach is non-medical. We are very much more of a universal design. I heard a really good word last year where universal design was starting to be referred to as universal delight. So it's something that applies to everybody, which really is, I mean, it's a slight shift in narrative, right? But universal design, okay, sounds like a technical thing. Universal delight is something that we all can enjoy, right? It's no longer has the stigma of specialty something. It applies to everybody. Everybody enjoys it. And we have started to get a little bit more receptive to that with the aging population, because we have multi-generational households where grandma basically otherwise is ushered to the side room because she can't climb that bar stool in the kitchen during Thanksgiving dinner to help prepare, rather than have the whole family gather around. So a simple redesign actually not only makes it handy for grandma, but then also gives you 5 to 10 years of independent living in that house, because as you get older, you don't want transition heights and deal with stuff that you don't need to. We're all lazy creatures anyway, right? So I think it's important to also point out that not only is it expensive, but in those rare occasions where you actually can get on the list and get housing, and that it is somehow affordable,
or subsidized,
okay,
or whatever,
that those housing, that housing may not necessarily be adequate.
That is such a great point. There's so few accessible housing units available.
Most people deal with ADA from the development industry side of things as a stigma, as a thing that, oh my gosh, why am I being saddled with this? Until today. Mm-hmm. And I have tried to convince people, especially in the commercial side of things, whether they're businesses or I do medical spas and wellness centers and retail, that you have not only a population that has special needs. You also have an incoming population that is injured veterans. You have a population that's aging. You have a population that is all, like, especially with boomers, that are fiercely, fiercely independent in their makeup. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Why exclude them?
In fact, it's good business to make sure that your facilities can accommodate them. So this thing about, you know, we got to get our heads out of our proverbial, you know what, right? About the fact that we can basically look at affordable housing on a project and go, huff and puff, and, you know, just say, well, would you, city council, take an in lieu fee for me and then go build your own thing so I don't have to handle it over here?
Yeah.
Okay? Become a responsible citizen as well as a person making profit. And also, get your head out of your proverbial you-know-what and look at your business and look at the market that's out there that actually will probably be more loyal if you actually provide for them.
And a larger base of
customers. In a manner that does not segregate them, but actually includes them. And I think we're going to go to a break, right, Paul?
Yes, sir.
When we come back, I want to introduce Tim, and I want to talk about that a little bit more, because people just assume these things are around. It's not. That ramp you're talking about, that zero entry to the house, that counter and clearances, that grab bar in the right place. Okay, I got a house. HUD paid for part of it, or an apartment. I don't know whether I'm going to be there 10 years from now or not. Who knows? They're going to kick me out. How do I modify the house? How do I actually live independently in that space?
Particularly if you're developmentally disabled.
Right. We'll be back.
If you are like the majority of Americans, you want to continue living in a familiar environment throughout your maturing years. In fact, according to many surveys, 82% of homeowners overwhelmingly prefer to age in place, which means living in their current homes safely, independently, and comfortably, regardless of age or ability level. With over 30 years of combined experience in residential, commercial, hospitality, and destination resorts fields, Your Home for a Lifetime is a company dedicated to empowering you to maintain your quality of life and independence by helping you make your house your home for a lifetime. Do you want to reorganize or remodel your home? Do you want to add a full bathroom and possibly a bedroom on the main floor? Are you looking to make your kitchen more functional? Is an aging parent moving in, or your child is moving out, or even moving back in? Call Your Home for a Lifetime at 949-492-1872 or check them out on the web at yourhomeforalifetime.com and find out how they can help you make your house your home for a lifetime.
Okay, we're back, and really, I just want to say this. Okay, this particular topic, okay, and especially when you drop that pebble in that proverbial pool and the ripples that happen, okay, especially when it comes to housing, okay, to accommodations, to safe havens for people, right, really is very close to my heart, okay, it not only because of professionally what I do. I come from a family that is extended family that has a lot of people in different age brackets, different capacities, different needs, you know, people that are maybe in the end of their life and they have, you know, they're ailing people, you know, and fortunately, and I'm very blessed to have a support system like that. But I also identify the fact that a lot of people don't. We live in a very transitional society. We move from one state to the other. We separate ourselves from, you know, support systems along the course of our life. That's a normal person. I mean, I shouldn't say a normal person. That's an average person, okay? But a person with developmental disabilities or special needs, that reality is even more serious and amplified, I think, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm really happy to have you guys here today to talk about this. And I want to introduce Tim Chervenak.
You got it.
I got it. All right. Yeah.
Couple,
you know, it's I get in my own, my throat gets in my own way sometimes. Tim is the Director of Employment Services for Project Independence. He's also President of the California Disability Services Association. And I'm going to let you introduce yourself, Tim, as far as what your responsibilities are and involvement with Project Independence, because I know you're like a 20-year veteran of disability services and community involvement, right?
I've been involved in supported employment and day services and some of the other programs that Project Independence offers, for about 20 years. And what I oversee at Project Independence is primarily in a long-time program, supported employment. And really, supported employment really is the linchpin for somebody with a disability who wants to integrate into society and have a job. So basically, we help people get a job. We have a job developer who identifies their needs and figures out what kind of job somebody wants, and everything that goes into that. When is somebody available to work? How many hours do they want to work in a day or in a week? What type of work do they want to do? How far are they willing to travel? And we have to identify all those needs, consult with the family or support circle members, and then the job developer has to go out there and make those connections in the community. One of the big misunderstandings for a lot of people with disabilities and their families coming in is they say, what do you have? What kind of jobs do you have? And they're surprised when I say, none. We don't have jobs. The employers in the community have the jobs.
Is there a sense from those people who are asking that question that these jobs are come in certain shape or form that they're predefined for people with these special
jobs
needs.
Have been set aside for development.
You know what I'm saying? Like, here's certain things. Those are the jobs that you can do kind of thing.
Right. Some families might have that conception, and they might just think that because we're an employment program that we sort of function as a job board, and that we have just jobs lined up, whether it's categorized for a specific population or not. A lot of people just believe that we have jobs of various types and that they can just kind of choose among those. And the thing is, of course they can. Mm-hmm. We structure our programs around the choices of the people. So really, we in that sense, we're really respecting choice in the most immediate and authentic way.
But I have to ask, how many jobs are there for developmentally disabled? What kind of jobs are they?
Well, I would start with the next second one, okay? Because in my mind, okay, and I may be completely idealistic, okay?
You always are.
I always am. Okay, it's the Aquarian in me, okay? But in my mind is people, whatever people are able to do, they should be encouraged to develop that ability. Okay, so I don't think of a person as being limited in what they can do. In fact, if anything, I think there may be certain strengths that are below the surface that only you find out about when that person is allowed the opportunity to do something.
I don't disagree, but there must be a stigma. If somebody came in and said, we want you to hire somebody who has cerebral palsy in the studio here, no matter how egalitarian I might want to be, I would have a certain hesitation to do that.
But you know what? You failed to say, Paul, in your preface to that. Mm-hmm. You failed to say what it is that they would be hired in the studio to do.
Yeah. So I guess what
that's the difference.
You're dealing with a wide range of people with a wide different disability. I found, for example, again, my wife's cousin. He was down. He was he was high capability or something. However they define that. And there was some program that I think it was Pizza Hut or somebody like that had a program where they would use developmentally disabled people. They found that even with severe disabilities, they could put together pizza boxes. And they liked it, and it was a good function. And there was a program created specifically to employ people.
So since we're basically just hijacking the show again, you and I talking directly, let me ask Tim the question. Is there such a thing as a list of jobs, if you will, descriptions that are sort of conducive to people
or created for? Like, yeah.
No, I think your optimism is well founded because there is job type for somebody with a disability because the abilities of people with disabilities are as diverse as anybody in society.
We're all individual, even in those cases.
Okay.
Everybody has
abilities. That being said, though, there must be resistance to hiring people with developmental
disabilities. Are you sure you're a baby boomer?
I'm just saying it's got to be. I mean, do you go out and talk to employers and say, look, we have a population of people, and don't discount them. They can do this.
I think that if there was a stigma about that, that was something that was a really significant obstacle when supported employment first started around 1985. It wasn't typical to see people with disabilities in jobs. If you were a customer,
it's amazing
in a
that
store,
it's only as recent as 1985.
Yeah,
by the
that's
way,
right.
That's amazing.
And there a lot of progress has been made. In the last 30 years. And so we're in a position now where when you're talking about the type of entry-level jobs that a lot of people, not all, but a lot of people that come into our program, those type of entry-level jobs, maybe that where they might interact with customers, they don't like the person because they're, cute or special in some way. They like them because they're familiar with them, because they're a reliable employee that does good work. And it's just, it's not... For the customers that go into those stores, it isn't even thought of as something special or exceptional. It's true integration.
They don't say how cute or whatever.
So do you find that it is equally important to match, to develop the independence abilities of certain people the population that you're serving, but also in this particular case, equally important to educate that potential employer.
That's what I'm getting at. I think you got to educate employers.
And how do you do that? How do you actually reach out to that employer? Because I'll tell you why I'm asking the question. In this particular case today, we're talking about people with developmental disabilities, okay? In other shows, we've talked about people that are returning veterans with skill sets that employees cannot understand how this person in the military is going to basically now transition into that.
You ran a missile battery. Okay, so great. What does that do for me? How is that going to help me?
So they
don't understand what they're capable of doing.
And I'm always looking for lessons of things that work and maybe craning them over different things. So what do you do? How do you get through to that employer?
That process starts even before the person starts on the job. From the time the job developer makes that contact with a hiring manager, an HR person, a supervisor, they are educating them about the supports that we can help provide to back somebody up. Once somebody does start, then a large part of the support that the job coach provides on the job is that those peripheral supports. Obviously, where they're focused on helping the person in whatever their needs are, whether it's learning how to do the job, how to interact with coworkers, how to understand the policies and procedures of the employer. But so much is about helping that person integrate well with at the job site where they're working, whether that be a grocery store or an office or a warehouse. And so we do a lot of coworker training. We help by developing these integration plans to develop what we call natural supports. Mm-hmm. And natural supports are really, really important because everything, it's a very dynamic environment. In any employment situation, coworkers will change, supervisors will change. And so we have been, some of our the people that we support have been stung over time by kind of having one person who was kind of just looking out for them. And then that one person is a manager that gets transferred to another location, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden that their accountability is different, and they suffer.
On their own,
where we can build solid natural supports, then we aren't just relying on just a supervisor who's kind of looking out for them. We're helping that person integrate, be part of that job site, and understand that they're you know, where the coworkers understand that person as just like any other coworker, any other friend. They're included in everything from staff meetings to outside of work barbecues.
Mm-hmm.
And that is usually a recipe for success.
That is so touching to me, as you say that. And I'm embarrassed to say, I'm thinking to myself, okay, so we hired somebody with a developmental disability. Yeah, we would assign somebody to watch out for them. We would probably not include them in the regular staff. They would be a special category of somebody. If you had a pizza store, I'm thinking my wife's cousin, you know, he was just, nobody else was interfacing with him. He was just in the back making boxes. And the owner was great and letting him do it. And the owner found that he was very reliable and took to it and liked it, and where others would be complaining and not doing it. But I doubt that anybody integrated that
I think there's also something, just as a business owner, something that will probably also play out, which is the fact that due to the lack of clarity and really being educated, the sense is probably, this is going to cost me more to bring in somebody who's going to need that additional support.
And it's going to have potential
problems. I'm
going
to have to adjust my environment and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? And I just want to read this because right underneath your mission statement, you have a list of, say, what we believe, okay? Now, if I read this without having prefaced what this organizational focus is, okay?
Right.
You tell me how this does not apply to every single human being or should apply to every single human being, okay? Okay, the first one is a good one, okay? But people with disabilities have the right to participate fully in the community, okay? Mm-hmm. The integration of people with disabilities in the normal flow of community life will serve to enlighten and strengthen the community's understanding of the great value and contribution added by their presence. Again, if you have integrated people, then this thing about, I don't understand how this is and it's something I don't know if I can deal with,
the stigma
goes away. But you've got to integrate in order for that to happen. You can't just be looking at it from outside and ideologically thinking about it.
So I'm going to turn it back on you, Mr. Ideologue here, Mr.
Go ahead.
Idealist. You work in a very high-end field. You've worked for, and we've rattled them off before, very high-end.
Ritz Carlton's, Four Seasons, Hyatt's.
Yeah. I can't imagine Four Seasons and all this stuff. You're going to go back to them as their designer and say, just by the way, I met these folks, and they help support developmentally disabled people mm-hmm. who might want to work in your high-end mm-hmm. spa, mm-hmm. your high-end hotel, your high-end thing. And you tell me that they aren't going to look horrified and you're like, not here. Oh, our customers are so demanding and discerning.
But here's the other thing that you forgot about.
In restaurants. Okay? And, yeah.
I also happen to have a business background prior to going into interior design.
I know.
So my pitch to them would be, especially in this environment, especially in today's age and world,
right,
is that you also have an ability here or a possibility, an opportunity here to come across as a responsible member of the society in which you serve,
yeah,
as a business owner, as a provider.
Good
okay?
PR, the PR.
And this is, yes, right. You want to spend $5,000 for a sheet of print in some glossy magazine about your business, or do you want to get a flood of PR, positive PR about how you're actually a nice human being, yeah, okay, as a corporation, right?
Well, and we're going to hold you to that because now you're a PI ambassador. But I want to also...
I'll tell you, I was stuck on the Island of Mauritius, I know it's horrible, for 3 months on a project back in 98, right? This isn't even about disability.
Right.
Okay? This is about where I'm sitting here, we're revamping this hotel that is... They were priding themselves to be a six-star hotel. In fact, they tried to label themselves a six-star hotel, which there is no such thing on the planet as a six-star hotel.
Right.
So they ended up realizing that they can't get away with that. So they changed the name of the company from Sun International to The One and Only. And you guys will see this all the time, The One and Only and the property name, The One and Only and the property name. Right. So The One and Only was their answer to being called a six-star hotel, right?
Right.
So we were redoing this property on a lagoon, on a sandy beach, in the middle of the Indian Ocean,
island, yeah,
off the coast. I mean, the island is so tiny and exclusive, right? They have a staff. Now, this is the kind of property where people are leaving Rolexes on the counters and expensive stuff on the counters, walking over to the beach. You know, you think I want a drink, refill, the drink shows up, that kind of facility, right?
Right.
So what is the driving thing that makes that possible? The service staff.
Sure.
Right? It comes down to actually redoing the break room, the lunch room for the service staff, right? And the executive management of the property, in their wisdom, were trying to nickel and dime everything that they put in the staff. They just went through a multi-million dollar renovation in rooms that the staff is going to work with, right?
We want top staff, but a cheap break room.
Why are we even spending money on the staff? Okay, so I actually told them. Blatantly, and I could have probably been, you know, walking the plank on the friggin' island, right?
Yeah.
But I told them, I said, if you want to provide the kind of service you say you want to provide, you got to take care of your people.
And now you're going to go back to that same island and say, and how about including some people that are developmentally disabled, that are autistic, that have cerebral palsy, that all these other Down syndrome or something here? Well, they can do this. They're capable. We'll give them support. Whatever.
You know what, Paul? How many times did you watch Rain Man? How many times have you watched things where people with special needs and special, with disabilities actually excel in certain other things?
I don't disagree with what you're saying, but I'm trying to put you on the spot.
I'm totally okay with doing that.
There's a million examples.
Absolutely.
Bobby, who's on our board, actually has a developmental disability, and he's worked for Marriott for 35 years in customer service. And a few years ago, he was their international employee of the year.
Wow. Not just national, international.
My brother-in-law's wife, okay, I'll give her a plug, okay, works with autism, with kids with autism, mm-hmm. okay? Uh-huh. My wife is a, she has a degree in support.
This is not good that you're forgetting what your wife does.
No, because she has transitioned in what her role was, but she has a degree in counseling, and specifically to college students and she worked at Cal State Long Beach, still works at Cal State Long Beach, college students that in their families are the first in their families to actually go to college.
Sure.
So we're talking about a lack of a support system. We're talking about people with challenges. Okay, let's not call it disability.
Right.
But they come in all shapes and forms. Here's kids that don't have a disability per se, but their challenge is that they don't have a support system.
They don't know
so you
to
have
to college,
provide yeah. that and at the same time educate people around them how to deal with this. Okay, I'm involved with a nonprofit called Arab American Civic Council where we are actually doing a refugees welcome book. You got refugees coming in. They have special needs as well, right? So I am absolutely, I have no qualm basically
I
doing that.
I applaud you for all that, but I want to see you walk the walk and go back to the Four Seasons or somebody like that and suggest that they hire a developmentally disabled person.
All I have to tell them is, I'll get you all kinds of press. And they can't, you know, because them and they, because people, especially people like politicians, have never seen a photo op they didn't like.
Well, I'll tell you.
I'm sorry, that's the jaded side of my head.
What our job developer would say going into an employer like that is, let me bring you someone who's capable of doing this job.
You don't have to accommodate. You don't have to suffer because you do this.
Right, we're not asking you to lower your standards. We're saying that
let us help you. Let us help support you meeting these standards.
Yes,
right, because that's what our job coach does. Right. It's not to excuse somebody from the standards. It's that the support that we offer helps people meet their standards.
Right,
and it's a continuous evaluation. Like you say here, it's a continuous evaluation to provide organizational direction, both for the people with the special needs and also the potential employer.
I have been to a few fancy hotels. I haven't been to your fancy spas and stuff. I would be hard-pressed to think that there's much of a developmentally challenged population in those high-priced, high-powered, very worried about customer service.
And you know what? They are, though.
Yeah.
See, they are, good.
Once you're in this business, you walk around and you think, I have people that could do that. And what we're offering employers is an answer to their employment issues. And we bring people that meet their needs. And we also bring people that make it important for those other coworkers to come to work. So now, maybe you have a mundane job, but you also feel like you're a part of something more important, this community that serves people with developmental disabilities. And so coworkers of people with disabilities tend to stay at the job longer and do a better job.
Somehow they find meaning in that.
We just read, you know what I'm realizing? I think we need to revitalize your faith in humanity. Because as a baby boomer and a hash bash goer, right?
I'm very
somewhere along the way, you kind of lost your...
I did. I lost.
You got a little too jaded there.
I did as I get older, because I think that a lot of organizations talk this, but when it comes down to doing it, I question how many, and I applaud the work. Hallelujah, we're talking about this. Hallelujah there. I can't believe that we have to talk about this and convince people that developmentally disabled people don't have to be isolated and institutionalized.
Well, and there's cultural implications, right? Because I think, like Deborah said at the beginning, these people have different backgrounds. They come from different realities. So, again, they're getting older. We're a country that's getting older. You know, we can't just continue to not acknowledge that.
Ignore it.
And I applaud you, too. 40 years is a commitment. I mean, to do this, both of you guys.
Can I ask just one other thing, because we're almost out of time. We're coming down the last couple of minutes. In your Declaration of Independence here, which I'll call it here, your document, the talking about...
Declaration of Project Independence, that's pretty good.
You can use that, Dan. You can use that idea. I was...
Hashtag Paul Roberts.
I heard the one term, and I got to explore that. You mentioned the law that was put in place a long time ago. Yeah. Are there actual civil barriers? I mean, do you have to fight to... Let's say I want to rent an apartment, and I'm developmentally disabled. Are there people who can say, not my building, you're not? I mean, do you have to fight to is there still a battle to be won, or is because you were talking about civil in there and I forget the exact term.
Civil rights
of people with developmental disabilities,
which implies that somehow they are being denied because of their disability.
Well, and I think without proper accommodation, whether they be architectural or financial supports that allow us to be there.
But they aren't legal. You don't have to go fight and,
It's not an Airbnb issue. I think that might be an issue, but in hotels, apartments.
But that's actually a really good point because there's nothing, even with the ADA, there's nothing that actually applies to residential. It's all a commercial application.
True, mm-hmm.
We don't have anything on the books right now that says you have to accommodate residential situations with these, you know, simple things like grab bars, wider corridors, zero entry, you know, doors. We don't, which is a shame, because what that means, it comes down to policy. It comes down to municipal leadership. It comes down to prioritizing, big picture.
And private business.
Meeting the needs of all your constituents and not the ones that are normal.
Right, and I think you might have better figures on this, but there's very few accessible apartments in Orange County.
That's what I'm getting.
If you're using a chair, you may only have 400 apartments to choose from. Universal design We could all use it.
And by the way, universal design isn't this thing we just discovered, okay? It's been around forever.
Exactly.
We have just avoided the heck out of it, okay? We've looked at ADA as being a burden, you know, Sisyphus pushing the friggin' rock up the hill, right? And I'm not going to pick on anybody, but I will say at least rumors has it. I had heard stories about even places that were built and developed. I'm not going to name any, but there are not that many, so you can figure it out, right? That were built and developed as retirement communities. Okay? Those actually did not have friggin' elevators on multi-level buildings.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you build retirement communities and not factor in that people's capabilities are going to diminish over age? It's like insanity in my book, right? Irresponsibility. I wouldn't even go say insanity. It's irresponsible development. Now, we have communities in Orange County that are becoming naturally occurring retirement communities. So it's not even like I walk through a gate and a guard station and this is where all the retired folks are. This is everywhere. And people are not moving out of their houses. Lower tax return money. More services needed. We've talked about all this stuff before, right?
Yep.
So it has to have a leadership at the municipal level, at the county level, that understands that we have to make these accommodations.
And thank goodness we do have that leadership. It's called Project Independence.
How do people find out about you guys more, and how do they get involved?
You can go on the web, proindependence.org, or you can call us. Our administrative office is here in Costa Mesa, 714-549-3464. Or you can come by any of our offices, one in Anaheim, one in Lake Forest. Our administrative office is here in Costa Mesa.
We're primarily a business channel. Business people, for the most part, listen to all of our shows. If a business person
how do they get involved
and said, you know, I want to try this.
Volunteer.
You talked me into it.
You want to volunteer?
Or you want to offer a job. Right.
You have jobs.
Right.
We're actually really excited to talk to you. And Carla is our job developer. Call the number I gave, 549-3464, here at 714. Or go on the web, proindependence.org, and we'll hook you up.
You can also reach us through Facebook, Twitter.
Exactly.
Yeah, the information is also will be on the Rad Life Facebook page. I know we included it in the teaser that we put out today, but again, I'll just give the website again. It's proindependence.org. So you shouldn't forget that with the 4th of July coming up, proindependence.org. And you need to be pro-independence, okay? So, and you can always, if you're trying to, you can't find it and you need to be connected with Tim or Deborah here, you can just give us a call. You can call me, 949-212-8299. That's my cell phone. I keep giving it up, and so far it's been okay. But, you know, if it gets kind of crazy, I'm going to change the number, and I'm not giving it away anymore. And then you can also email me at Rod, R-A-A-D, period, Gantus, G-H-A-N-T-O-U-S, at gmail.com. This was really good, guys.
I really think
we need to talk more about this, so we'll probably have you guys again. I really also want to explore, so I'm going to give you guys some homework, okay? Let's look at that housing situation and look at what can be done, what funds can be given towards it, what the sources may be, and let's look at how big a problem that is. Like, how underserved is that really? Because everybody assumes that, oh, it's not my problem, somebody else will take care of that.
Well, and you're dealing with not just to find affordability, but you're also then accommodation.
Which, by the way, affordable housing changes from county to county.
Yeah.
Right. So the assumption that it must be somebody's going to build a slum, you know, tenement down the street from me, not likely to happen. And affordable housing isn't a stigma. It should be something we look into, not only for people with disabilities and special needs, but also our own younger population that's trying to establish and start their lives. It's very important. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.